Thank you so much.
I've always had a secret wish that I was going to share the stage with Bono. This is as close as I'm going to get.
Right here.
I thought it was time for some good news, you know? And I think in that little presentation, Bono does a fabulous job of saying there's something big and good going on that we should be aware of and that's worth celebrating. It's interesting, you know, when he wants to close the deal, if you will, at the end of the presentation, after he's given us 10 minutes worth of data, he gives us 3 minutes worth of emotion. It's not like the rest of it's emotionless. But that's where he makes the point of it, where he says, you know what, the facts will take us so far, and they're important. But in the end, there's something about the tears, about the fact that the people who have stood up, who have engaged with the messiness of the Arab Spring, for instance, which he says he doesn't wish to underplay, that have chosen to do so because there's something in their hearts that says, this must happen. This must happen. And if it costs a lot, well, then that must be as it is as well. And I think there's a linkage there that I want us to mess around in. I want us to explore together a little bit this morning. This next bit of what we're going to do could feel like somebody took the balloon of optimism that Bono so skillfully inflated and launched and opened the valve and let the air out of it. And that is not what I wish this to be. If that happens, I can't control that, but it's not my desire. My desire is that this would help us make a connection between weeping, if you will, and acting, between emotions and facts, between desire and choice. Trevor and I were having this conversation that I mentioned in the blurb this week, a week or so ago, and he told me about a piece that he'd written, because I love Trevor and I love his art, I just said, well, you know, would you? Actually, he asked if he could do it for me, and I said, that'd be awesome. And so he read me this piece, and as I was listening to Bono, I thought, you know, part of what this piece does is it chronologically, it takes us from the age of those millennials with their G2 phone network exposing political corruption. It takes us from that chronological age down. And when we go down, the people that the age represents lose power. And they move toward being those that both are and those that represent dependence and the need for care and defense and nurture and all those sorts of things. I won't say any more. I think Trev's piece has lots to say to us, so why don't you come and do this?
My invisible sister. I see you, young girl Jesus Christ, with your face smushed against the window pane, looking out. You stare through the glass and bars as you seek far some other place where in your mind you are. Your vacant eyes betray your lost hope as you look on in dismay to a world beyond in which you've often wondered what it would be like to play. To sing and say that you had friends who you'd seen on this Freedom Day. But this Freedom Day is just a dream, lifting like a fog to reveal what is in reality, and what is heavy, may break the levee of your sanity and leaves you feeling empty and heavy. Yet I see a single tear run down your cheek, like the first raindrop in a famine-thirsty desert. I see you, Jesus. Your 9-year-old feminine frame, underfed. Your stomach as you are locked in your apartment prison. Underfed, your soul as you can't leave because you were bought at an expensive price. Those gangsters who came into your village and murdered your brother, who tried to protect you in his arms while your mother and father were held at gunpoint and told that you could either be sold to them or they would slay the rest of your sisters and brothers. Their choice was a farce. But your parents chose to spare your kin and ask God to forgive them their sin, that within their wrenched out hearts that day as they lamented the death of their son and forced abduction of their little one. Now, these gangsters were fair and cut off your brother's head and threw it at your parents' feet as payment. They were about legit transactions after all. This is the blood you were born in. For 1.5 years, you've bathed in it. But Christ, you still cry. A sign that your hope has not atrophied, your heart hasn't hardened yet, or become encrusted with layers of sediment from the trauma that took you from your father and your mom. You cry as evidence that even though you're bound in a room, having countless men rape you and take you and beat you and masturbate into you, you still weep in defiance. Broken Messiah, for what else can you do but revolt in emotion that reveals that there is some part of you that has not been dominated, can't be contaminated, refuses to be decimated, will not be annihilated, and this human sign, this emotional frontier that is unconquerable, leaves your captors absolutely frustrated. Yeshua, why won't you just die? I look up to the roof that's 2 stories above the window you're currently sitting in, and suddenly it's as if my eyes open and we're allowed to see heaven. What lays before me is a group of giant angel-like men who stand in rows of 20 by 10 and fill the rooftop. They have broadswords stuck in their sheaths, armed to the teeth, and at a moment's notice with a quick flash underneath can quickly draw their weapons from beneath. These fierce warriors have looks on their face of solemn protection drawn. Their defensive duty to protect the little one all day and night long. These grim-faced soldiers stand immense like boulders as they keep their eyes to the ground and to the sky, keeping a lookout for any sign of the sly enemy who will try to bombard the Christ. They stand in vigilance. Their numbers vast. They are the best of the hordes of heaven. They are prepared for the task, for the fight and shining light that their presence does best. Before this vision fades, I see 2 strong angels, as if Michael were doubled, standing behind and to both sides of little Jesus. Their presence is an insurance to me that she will be protected in some way mysteriously, knowing that it does not and will not look like what I imagine to be liberty, because my liberty is to see her set free. But she is held and perhaps right where she needs to be. Little girl, I wish I knew your name so I could tell your story. But I know you only as Christ. Know that you shine in my prayers, mine, as I intercede and try to find the right plea to God above to see you free, my captured Jesus Queen. I believe that you are protected. Somehow. But until you are free, until you are well, until you are whole, until you feel human again, for you will I bow. I love you, little sister, and I'm sorry our efforts are not enough.
conversation with recently, Charlie, about the last piece he did here. And they said that it was like every line needed to be unpacked for a long time. I think it's one of Mark's, the art you make, is that it's so deeply considered and so full that it's hard to even know where to start. But we're in Holy Week, and one of the things that is true about this week is that it's a week in which, in a deliberate way, like we don't do it any other time of the year in the church calendar, we unfold the story of Christ's suffering and of some of the moments of darkness and futility, it seems, in that story. And we know how the story ends. We'd like to kind of cut to the resurrection, you know? And let's just talk about the good news, right? And we need the good news, but there's a reason why. There's a reason why we need to walk into the darkness of this story, and we need to do it more often than we do. And you use this image in your piece of this little girl. This is a real story you're telling us, and of this little girl as Jesus. I'm going to ask you questions that are too big for our space, okay? But can you tell us what it says to you about who Jesus is that you would think of this girl and represent this girl in this piece as Jesus?
Well, you're right about that, the space. The idea of the Passion Week is so bizarrely hopeful to me that this is the week of suffering of the Incarnation, which is one of the most baffling parts of the story, right? This, the limitless to the completely limited. And in all that it would mean to be limited while trying to be limitless, right? While trying to bring about these ideas that are well beyond human capacity, these 3,000-year-old ideas that Bono talks about, equality. And the suffering that brings up when people try and fight for that. The idea that our God would come into suffering form, suffering frame, and be willing to go through and not call it quits, to not call out for the angels, to not disappear. I mean, there's moments early on where he disappears from the pain, right? Where they got the stones and they're ready to throw him and he somehow walks out. He could have done that. But the Passion Week is him grinding through it. And I think fulfilling that lamenting heart that's there as well as the hope throughout the entire story. Weeping in the garden over Jerusalem. Weeping in the garden because the cross is too heavy and the cup is too great. Weeping again, I'm certain, as he's being flogged and whipped and mocked. Couldn't carry the cross all the way. And so this idea of joining with in the suffering is just, when I lament the most, I'll be honest, it's the only thing that keeps me anchored, that still thinks there's something to this story. And my most doubtful is that this God chose not to separate and say, you'll be okay, everything will be fine, but said, I'm coming with you, and I'm going to be murdered with you, and I'm going to be hungry with you, and I'm going to be humiliated with you, and everything will be okay. It's different. It's substantive. And it keeps me going my most skeptical days.
And you just touched on something so intriguing in the historic story of Jesus coming to Trev. This moment, we don't tend to camp out on it much, but I think it's a really profound moment where Jesus can't carry the cross all the way. What a fascinating image. It's such a window in to the chosen limitation of Jesus. And that Jesus, in that moment in the story, Jesus can't even complete the mission without the help of a human. Right? That's that intersection right there in the story. And somehow that seems to be the intersection where we live. That's the intersection where the peace that you wrote lives. Is at that intersection where we go, I need to pick this up. It's mine to pick up. There's something here for me to do. There's something here for us to do. And despite the profound and sometimes shattering sense that what we choose to pick up and do is not enough, it is still what we are asked to do. And so deeply consistent with the experience and expression of Christ in this story, that we can pick up in a limited way what we can, and know that we are participating as we are able in a thing that is too big for us to understand. And yet we've kind of got enough of a handle on it to know this is ours to do. Even on those days and moments where we go, this isn't enough. This isn't enough. All right. Thanks, Jeff. If we keep going, we're not going to have lunch. I love you, brother. Oh. I'm not going to add much to that like I could. I think Trevor has done as good a job as anyone could do of setting the trajectory for Holy Week for us and well beyond, tossing us sort of headlong into the wrestle that is ours all the time, about what it looks like to engage as deeply as we can, choose as well as we can, weep with those who weep, but also, and also, to rejoice with those who rejoice, and that these things are not actually incompatible with one another. They're actually meant to be companion experiences. They're actually what we're made for. Not just one or the other. And when we see just one or the other, there's something in us that says this is not right. When we participate in a culture that is so insistent about being giddy, that it will do almost anything to blunt the pain, we look at that and we say, that's dysfunction, and we know it. And when we look at a story, even glance sideways at a story like the one Trevor was telling us, and see someone whose life looks like it is only suffering, and say, this is not right. Either. And perhaps in this season of the history of humanity, where the clarity of resurrection is made murky by the reality of suffering, our call is to not bail, to not step out of the game. Peace.